¿Qué onda, primos?
Primas.
Y primes.
Welcome to my...
My primos.
My primos.
My...
Primo.
Podcast.
My name is Freddy.
My name is Kevin Garcia.
My name is Elia Maria Madrid.
Well, this is Chikuma, whenever I can make it.
My Primos Podcast discusses all things fandom and pop culture.
From comic books.
Movies.
To whatever obsession we have this week.
But with a Latine...
Latine.
My Latine.
Perspective. Remember, we're all primos.
We're all primes.
We're all primos.
No matter what part of the world we're from.
John, by the way, Elia and I were saying that since Freddie's not here, we were trying to debate which one of us could do the intro. So I decided now, unilaterally, it's going to be you, John, intro us.
Oh, my God. Okay.
No, because yeah, Freddie is out. He'll be back. But let's get started. Ready? ¿Qué onda, primos, primas, and primes? Welcome to My Primos Podcast, the only podcast that we are all on currently. And I want to say, my name is Kevin Garcia. Our head honcho primo, Freddy, is out at the moment, but he will return. And with us today is my prima and yours, Elia Maria, Spice Illustrations.
Hi, Kevin.
Damn, you beat me to it. I was going to say...
You know, because you can't do it today.
No, I can't.
I have to fill in.
And not only that, but like I listened in on that because I was real busy during, you know, South By and with my Kickstarter and everything. And I heard you guys, you know, filling in for me. I felt honored in absentia. So that was cool. And now I was like, ready? Nope, didn't work.
We have to just honor the legendary Kevin Garcia whenever and fulfill the duty.
Oh God, is we all need a Kevin Garcia in our hearts now a thing or something?
That's the theme of the season, I think.
All right, and with us is our frequent primo, John Avinia, who is the creator of Avinia Comics. And I was just trying to explain to somebody this the other day, and they didn't quite understand. I said, he's only been making indie comics for like a year or so, and he's got like 1,000 out right now. John, could you introduce yourself and tell me just how many comics you've published so far since you started publishing indie comics?
So I'm John Avina, and I have 26 comics out right now.
And you started when?
I published my first comic in 2023.
Okay, so
at the beginning,
just for the record, everybody, the standard in professional the big name comics, let's put it that way, they're all professional, is like one per month, and indie, we're lucky if we get one every 6 months. And how, John, how?
I'm super tired.
I feel
no
that.
One told me I could stop, so I was just like, I'll just keep going.
It's all he knows now.
You know what? No one telling you, you know, even if they told you you could stop, don't believe them. All right. So since it's been a while since Elia, you've been here, and John, it's actually been not that long since you were here as far as guests go, but it's still been a bit. What have y'all been up to? Elia, what you been doing lately?
Kind of just having a refresh. I had some family events happen last week, and had to take some time away because I don't like to push myself. Like, I still have to work, of course, but I don't like to do everything to cloud the brain. But in that time, though, I happened to start playing Fortnite for the first time in my whole life, and I'm addicted.
Well, I have good news and bad news. There is a new game coming out from Marvel that is basically a Fortnite clone, all starring Marvel characters. And I'm just wondering if you're going to be maining Loki. That's what I want to find out.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's called Marvel Rivals. And if you see the trailer, you see exactly what I'm talking about. It basically is the quality, so far, at least the trailer, looks like the quality of Fortnite, but, you know, Marvel with an anime aesthetic. And John, how about you? What have you been doing lately?
We have
other than every comic book in the world.
We did release two kids comics, so we have like a kids line now, like an all ages comic thing. And
that.
Then we released a new comic called Familiar Dungeons, which is really exciting. So
on the note of Familiar Dungeons, you sent a package to the show, and it was very well appreciated. I think.
Oh my God! Yeah. The chat was going wild when we were seeing pictures. We're like, "What is this?
Yeah,
cool!"
Freddie's definitely posting that on social media. And and we've all had a chance to read at least the first chapter, and we definitely loved it. So Wait, real quick, what I've been doing, I just did a Comic-Con this past week, Hill Country Comic-Con. It was a lot of fun. And I've got another one coming up, Staple, which is an amazing Comic-Con. We'll talk about that in a moment. First, Familiar Dungeons. John Avina, give us the elevator pitch. What is this?
So Familiar Dungeons follows siblings from like a kind of a broken home as they are transported from a high school party to a role-playing module. And they have to like set aside their differences in order to find their way home.
And is it fair to call this an isekai?
I'm not sure what that is.
Okay, sorry.
I don't either.
Oh my, yeah. What? Oh, yeah. I thought, oh wow. Okay, I'm okay. All right, so we got to back into this. So I am the Marvel comics guy. I definitely read a lot of Western comics. I read a lot of European comics. I do read some manga, but not nearly as much as my friends. So it is weird to me that I am the least qualified person to explain this. But isekai is basically a genre of manga and anime and manhwa and stuff that has so taken over the publishing industry in Asia over the past 20 years that it has become a force unto itself. And it is basically characters were in one world, bad stuff happened, they're now in another world. It's what we used to call portal fiction here, stuff like, Wizard of Oz or Peter Pan. But in Japan, the stereotype is that the protagonist will get hit by a truck and then they'll wake up in a Dungeons & Dragons world. And with a lot of isekais, the characters, it's so popular now, characters are now aware of the rules of that world. And they know that, well, I got isekai. That means I'm going to be, there it is. There's my menu of my options. Looks like I have a few points to get to the next level. Okay, I can do that. And so they actually are aware they're in a game world. It's become a whole thing. And I love that you basically made a Western isekai without actually knowing that was a thing.
I read some manga, but I'm not as like well-versed in it as I should be. Like I'm always getting recommendations on stuff. So I should like dive into it a little bit more, but yeah, for me, it was like, when I explain it to people, I'm like, oh, it's like Jumanji or Tron. It's basically just like you're here and now you're there and you got to find your way back. Like Jumanji's been pitched around a lot for like the newer ones. Cause SNL had a skit about that over the weekend and it made me laugh. Cause I was like, this is so topical for me.
well, that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's becoming increasingly topical as the years go by because so many things are part of it. Although most of the ones in Japan are not about finding their way back. Some of them are. The other main, I was going to say other influence, but that first one's not an influence, just a coincidence. The main influence, as I understand it, is role-playing games, right? Like Dungeons & Dragons?
Yes.
So have you played one before?
Yeah, I DM'd a Star Wars one for a really long time.
Nice.
So we did that, and then I was a player at a table for like 4 or 5 years, and now we're going to redo like a longer campaign that I get to DM. So writing this really kind of like reinvigorated my love for the game and like storytelling. And one of the things we made for this was like little dice sheaves. So you can actually put your dice in here.
Dear Lord, that's amazing. So
these are the
you got a dagger that holds dice in it. It is literally a dagger of fate.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So this is the first one we did. These are the prototypes. And then I just got these in today.
Yo!
Branded appropriately. So, oh god.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so badass.
We're gonna start selling those like online and stuff, and then you guys are gonna get it for like, because you guys are awesome. And Freddie was telling me about your D&D thing. So I was like, these are going out for sure.
Oh my god, those are killer.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Elliot, you've got a background with D&D too, right?
I do. I love playing D&D. I started in 2017, not that long.
I was going to say, since I was a wee illustration.
around 2017, so about 7 years.
And that was D&D too, right? Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah, I love playing Dungeons & Dragons, but I also love like other tabletop games as well, tabletop role-playing. If I get to roll dice and play a character, I like it.
I have actually barely played Dungeons & Dragons at all, but I've played a ton of tabletop. For example, White Wolf, the people who make the New World of the World of Darkness or Vampire the Masquerade, those kind of games. I played those. I basically ran the same game for 7 years straight. It was just one ongoing universe with mostly the same players. It was a lot of fun. But my experiences with D&D have all been weird. When I was like in middle school, I'd never played it before, and I saw these. I was in a new town. I just moved recently, and I was trying to make some friends. We're a couple of nerdy kids. I'm like, I'm nerdy. I can hang out with these guys. And these guys were full on like 80s nerds, like the thick glasses and everything, but like in the 80s nerd way, not in the cool stylish way like today. So they were planning to play the game, and I was like, "Hey guys, can I play too?" And they were like, "You wouldn't get this game; it's above you." And so, so that was my first experience with Dungeons and Dragons.
That's toxic. That's gross. Yeah.
Let me go further.
I'm sorry you had to deal with that.
So my next experience with Dungeons and Dragons—not really that, but the game, the D20 system was the Star Wars game. And a friend of mine who he and I always game together were invited by another friend to play at their house. So we get there and he wants to try out the Star Wars game. We're like, cool, let's do it. And then right before we start, he says, okay, but nobody's allowed to be Jedis because this takes place right after, Return of the Jedi. There are no Jedi yet, so you can't have any Force powers. We're like, we're in a Star Wars game with no Force powers. You know what? Fine. Let's play the game. We'll have fun. He goes, okay, so you're who? Okay. And this is who my character is. And we're like, aren't you the Dungeon Master? And he goes, yeah, but I'm playing too. And we're like,
oh,
this is going to go well. So his character was a survivor of Order 66 who was a Jedi Master. He trained Luke. Han was jealous of him and Leia was in love with him. And literally, as we're playing the game, he would pause the gameplay to be like, all right, so my character's going to talk with Leia, and he would have a conversation with both sides. And literally, my friend and I looked at each other and we're like, okay, so while you're doing that, we're going to, no, we got to play this out first. And we're like, okay. So that was my second experience.
It was like an acting gig. So the DM was just like there for their acting. Okay, what?
It was some very personal fan fiction that I was way too close to.
So what I'm learning is we need to sit down and play D&D together.
I need to get a proper D20 game.
Yeah.
That being said, I love Dungeons & Dragons extended media. You know, I love the movie. I love the cartoon show as a kid, you know?
Yeah.
What brought this about, John?
I have 7 siblings. So for me, it was like, we are all so different that I wanted to kind of like, I wanted to tell a story about like my siblings and my family dynamics. So if you look at it, I have one older sister that's in the comic, and then there's me, and we have the same mom. My other siblings are through my dad. So in the comic, I make a joke about the dad being like, and it's real like that. I didn't ask for permission either. That's just a real thing.
Yeah.
So all my other siblings are from my dad, and they have different moms for the most part.
Gotcha.
So it's like a weird web, like family tree thing. It's not even like just, it just branches out all crazy. So I was like, my younger brother is like a minor league soccer player, and I'm nowhere near that, like at all. And then, like, my youngest sister's name is Vanessa, and she just had a baby, and she's 20. So I'm just like, oh, I have so much to write about. But I didn't know what, like, vehicle to tell that story in. So, well, I was thinking about running a D&D game, and I thought about how fun it would be to do one for my family, because they would all just play character, like, bigger versions of themselves or what they wanted to be. And I was like, oh, I already know what kind of character each one would want to be. And then I just started writing that down. And then I was like, there's a story here about that. And then I was able to just kind of like put it together. And me and the artists are like doing the layouts for like issue 3 already, because I'm like ready to go. And the more I'm writing it, I'm like, yeah, this is like real personal, but also honest and like funny and stuff.
John, so every time I talk with you, I learn some other fascinating thing about you. like, you know, you work at a funeral home and you've made 5,000 comics. And then, wait, where are you in the 7 kids? Like, what number?
I'm number 2. So okay. There's my,
for some reason, I was like, I'm the 7th son of a 7th son. But you know what's really scary is, as you were describing that, I was counting my siblings and I'm like, wait a minute, there's 7 siblings in my family too.
Yeah.
You're realizing this right now.
Well, we weren't raised together, so I had to like literally think about it. And I was like, oh, okay, all right, no, okay. All right. I have a bigger family than I thought I did.
yeah. And I had to kind of cut you have 20 siblings? Down.
Do what?
I said, do you have 20 siblings, Elia?
No, I'm a weird Latina with zero siblings.
See, yeah. I thought I was a weird one with only one for the longest time, but then I was like, no, works out.
Yeah, that's the way I was. When I was younger, I thought I only had one sibling. And then I turned 10 and they're like, we got to talk.
And oh, I was like,
it's the Harry Potter talk. I'm a wizard or something. Like, yeah, this is right. Gonna be
and your parents are like, that's also true, but
yeah, that's not what we're all crying right now. And I'm like, oh, fantastic.
Oh no, not at 10. Oh no.
Yeah. Well, then they bring out like my siblings, like in my family yeah. kitchen. I'm like, what is this? And then like you get older and you figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, that needs to be in something.
You know, it's funny. As I was reading the story, I was getting into the idea of, because at first I figured they're just friends in high school or people who barely know each other in high school. But then as the dialogue goes through, I was picking up on that same sibling dynamic. And it's, you know, one I'm associated with as well. I've got a full brother, a half brother, half sister. I had two stepbrothers. I have a adopted sister. So it's like, you know, I get that. I get how that works.
Yeah, Elia, and then
we're going to find out that you have such a big family secretly eventually. It's going to be like, what?
Your parents are going to come out around the back and be like, we should talk.
Yeah.
Like, we heard your podcast and
it's like, well,
funny story. Yeah.
Bring them out.
It's being telecast. It's like, oh, God. Yeah. No, I really like I'm so tired of like, literature, anything, which is the typical nuclear family, you know, it gets so tiring after a while. Like this is so much more realistic. And now that like I've read through it, love it. And now knowing the story that it has with that connection with your family, that's just so cool to like think about your own personal like connection with putting your family in an adventure, because D&D is an adventure.
Yeah.
So that's really heckin' cool to like have that. Okay, family, we're gonna sit down and play D&D. And I drew it for us. Like, that's cool.
And you've played D&D with some of your siblings before?
No, none of them. I've tried to get them into it, but they are not into, like, my older sister, I could probably guilt her into doing it, because, like, that's the one that I was born with, so that's the one that, like, I'm the closest to, so I was like, I can get her to do it. My younger ones are much cooler than I am on like every level.
They're like, this is too nerdy for us, nerd.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Like, they would be like, so like, I'm like a wizard. I'm like, if you want to be, and they're like, well, tell me what I want to be. I was like, no, guys. Like, you have to, you have to come up with it. Like, you guys get to do what you want. And then they're just, I know they'll be murder hobos by like the end of the first game.
I mean, that's kind of like a given. Once
I feel like that's kind of a win sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's so neat. When you were pitching this to your artist, or I don't know how you came across your artist, what was their reaction on hearing and like wanting to put this realistically, you know?
So I sent them originally just like a breakdown of what I was hoping for. And then for the characters, it was all pictures of my siblings and like me. And I was like, hey, so this is like what they're going to be, because my middle name's Emmanuel. So like for that character, I was like, boom.
Nice.
So I like grabbed him and I was like, I put him in there and they're like, how close to these people do you want them to look? I'm like, as close as possible. And like for one sister, I picked her like when her hair was blonde. So when she looked at the poster, she wouldn't recognize herself right away. But there, Vanessa, as soon as she saw it, she was like, is that me? I was like, yeah, that's you.
Oh, my gosh. That's so cool. Hey,
I got to ask, did any of your siblings say, like, take me out? I'm not in there.
No, I didn't ask them permission. I just did it. So,
well, okay, to be fair, legally speaking, they are not officially in this. Any similarities to any people living or dead is purely coincidental. But unofficially, they're in there.
Yeah. Because I knew if I did, they would want, but they wouldn't try to filter me. They would just be like, oh, that's so cool. And then just ask me every day till I came out. Like, is it out yet? Is it out yet?
Like, am I muscular? Gotcha. Can I get a shirtless scene with a bunch
typical
of muscles?
Sibling things, yeah.
My younger brother is jacked, but he keeps working out. Like, he just works out all the time. So, like, he sends me snaps, and it's like, hey, I'm shirtless, like, posing and stuff.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm glad that we've gotten to this point.
Right. Yeah. This is where we are. This is where we are.
My youngest brother's been doing that lately. And I'm like, why? Why are you sending me mirror pictures from the bathroom of your
shirtless?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, he's looking good. Don't get me wrong. He's working out great.
My youngest sister doesn't realize if she reposts something on TikTok, I can see it. So it's just like the filthiest stuff. Like, and it's not even like book filthy or anything. It's just like, slow down, bro. Like, I'm here. I can see this. I'm the only other one of us that's on this app.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And she's like, I sent her like a text once and I was just like, hey, like, calm down. And she's like, what?
Girl.
You know what you should do one of these days is stitch one of her videos one time and then just look at the camera and be like and then that's the whole video.
Oh my gosh. I'd be mortified.
Yeah.
Oh man, I don't have sibling stories, so I'm just like living vicariously through y'all.
You have us.
Yeah.
So bringing this back to the D&D inspiration for a second, I was giving some of my personal horror stories. I've got others. Do you guys have any like really either weird or embarrassing and horrible or really great stories that happened while gaming? Elia, what you got?
I mean, I've experienced them all while gaming. It's like, which one do I choose? I think, oh man, I remember we were playing Wendy's came out with their own D&D or tabletop game.
Backtrack. Wendy's?
Yeah, has a Wendy's, the fast food stuff. Yeah, they literally had like this whole D&D campaign release where they were even having dice given as like the toys and stuff. Like they were in on it, but they
have a tabletop game. I need to look into this. I can't believe I didn't know about this.
Oh, what's it called? It's the Land of Frosty.
I'll look it up. What happened?
Okay. So I played a character based from the Land of Frosty. She was a sassy princess and always needed help. And my DM, she's like the best DM at improving. Like if we ask for something ridiculous, she will like, she has the stats quickly. She can search on Google to get a reference. And she's like, all right, this is what you have, level this. Like she's so good at doing that. And so she was a little spicy of a character. And I was like, can I hire a gimp? And so she was like, all right, let me look at the stats of protection for everything, all the leather. And it's like, okay, well, can I have an ultimate move that's summoning a gimp army? And it's like, I can't believe I'm discussing this over a Wendy's fast food tabletop campaign. And my DM is perfectly going and getting all the stats so that I can absolutely obliterate this boss. There it is. Yeah, Feast of Legends. It's actually so much fun if you want a good entry level tabletop game that's D&D, very D&D based.
I imagine if your character has red hair and braids, you're automatically given bonus points.
I mean, like it's a staple. But yeah, no, it's so like there's the Land of the Frosty. I think there's like Burger Land or something. It's so much fun. If y'all have a chance to play that system as like an entry and you've never played D&D, so much fun. So much fun.
I'm going to find that like right after this.
Yeah.
Find that.
You know what? If you can't, send me a message. I'll send you the book. Like I have the actual playbook.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
This is reminding me, there was an RPG, an indie RPG that came out years ago called Ninja Burger. And the whole premise of it was that you guys were a secret organization of fast food delivery people. This is way before Uber Eats. This is in the 90s. And your whole job was that an order had come in and you have to deliver it without anybody seeing you. And so you'd play out the game where you are ninjas whose whole goal in life, you know, you may fight other ninjas as well, but your whole goal in life is to deliver the burger and fries. And I'm like,
oh my God. Was this like dice based and like just risk? Oh my God. That's so cool. I love all these different games. Like now I'm gonna have to look that up and be like, guys, we have a new game to play. Because I love finding all these just like, what are we doing? Okay. I don't know. Role playing is fun when it's like stuff that's like, all right, we're gonna be raccoons tonight. All right, we're gonna be llamas running a karaoke club. Like I have found one that's literally like singing llamas for an entertainment show, and I'm really wanting to play it with someone.
I am down
with
it.
Yeah, tabletop's so wild. It's like taking you into these worlds like they get into in this comic. That's why I'm like, oh my god, we get a story where we're going in a D&D world, let's heck and go. Like, while I was reading the book, I wanted to see their character sheets. I was like, okay, well, what's their stats, what's this, oh my god, because oh my god, I can't, I love seeing the combat stuff building. Oh my god, I love a good D&D story.
John, what's your D&D story? Give us something weird, something good, something exciting, something horrible, something embarrassing.
So we I had just like left a table, like it was like a bad breakup. The DM was like supposed to take over for my buddy Aaron because he needed a break DMing because he had done it for like 3 years straight, and it all fell apart. So it was like a half the table went to go play with this guy Ryan. The rest of us stayed with Aaron, but Aaron was like, "Hey, like I'm gonna leave it up to you if you want to like DM or whatever." But all of my friends were kind of taking a break at that moment. So my wife was like, "A couple of people at my job want to play." And like we worked together at Barnes & Noble, but I had left at that point to start working at the funeral home. So I was like, yeah, like, sure, I'll do it. And then she was like, this guy Gabe wants to play. And he is like 6'4". He was a Marine. So like just 6'4", crew cut, like big guy. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like I'm used to like weirdos. Like I'm used to nerds.
Weirdos come in all sizes, sir.
That's what I figured.
Don't gatekeep weirdo.
And he had never played before. So I was like, okay, like I'll teach him how to play. We'll see how this goes. Maybe he'll like it, but we'll figure it out. And then my friend Jess came and she's like 4'2", maybe. Like she's really short, really small, but she's got like a real tough personality. Like she's really dirty when she plays D&D. And I was like, oh, this isn't going to vibe well. She wanted to play like this manic, like pixie character that was just like always trying to get some. And he was playing like a Goliath, like ranger, and my wife was just a chaotic dragon like born that was like trying to drink.
Hold on a second, I have a question. What kind of a character was your wife playing in the game?
A dragonborn.
That was my joke, man. I was saying that your wife is a chaotic dragon.
Sorry.
Oh my god,
she is. She's not here right now, but she'll say this and then she'll be like, what'd you say about my character?
Fair, honestly fair.
But then Gabe came and he sat down and he's like, I kind of prepared my character. I was like, all right. And then he jumped right into like an accent that he had been working on. And I was like, oh shit. I was like, perfect. And then like they ended up loving it. And like that table was like the most fun I had ever had because everyone was so different, but they vibed well. Like they understood the missions. They played chaotically. And then at one point they had found a goblin that they just adopted, even though it was a fully grown goblin. They were like, well, he doesn't have a name. So his name was like Gary Goblin. And they just dragged him around and it was like their buddy. So I had to come up with like a whole personality for this guy. But I went to their work one day just to get coffee and like pick up my wife. And they were like making jokes over the intercom to each other about their characters. And I was like, oh, like they're actually enjoying this outside of just like the table and hanging out. So it made me feel really good as a DM because like up until I wasn't making comics or anything. So I was like, you know, I wanted to write, I wanted to do stuff. And I was like, I don't know if I'm any good at it. But like the fact that they liked the storytelling that I was doing, Gabe ended up moving like before we got to finish that game. Aww. But their characters are showing up in the comic.
Nice. Aww, I love
that's
it.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love that.
See, I loved being so I played the White Wolf game, so they were called Storytellers instead of Dungeon Master, but I love being the storyteller so much so that when I finally got to be a player again, I forgot how to do that. But like what was really fun was hearing a friend of mine describe the way I would run the games to a new player. And he goes, it's kind of like Grand Theft Auto, where there's very obviously a mission in front of you, but you can ignore it and do other stuff instead. The difference is the mission happens without you. And so like I remember early on I had the story where obviously there was a woman who was running her own Babylonian cult and she was trying to call down an ancient god and they were supposed to stop her. They were all like, nah, I'm gonna do other stuff instead. So they did other stuff instead. And then like a few sessions later, because I hadn't planned for it, but since they didn't stop her, so a few sessions later I had a giant bull made of stars walking through downtown and they're like, what's happening? Well, she called the apocalypse, like you guys didn't stop her, so now fight that. And I was like,
well, I mean, yeah.
we were doing the Star Wars one, and I had set up this big elaborate pod racing thing. Like I built a track, and I got pod racers. So
that like physically,
like the little.
So you could be like physically, who's in front, and who's behind?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
So I built this whole thing, but the whole point of the mission was they were racing. It was kind of like episode one. They had a race for like a part in order to like get this girl off the planet because they were trying to help her. So yeah. Very Anakin, Qui-Gon. The race goes poorly just because of the rules.
As it does.
And the like, so they bail and they leave. And then like three sessions later, they're like, oh shit, we left her behind.
Like, what was the whole mission?
Yeah, they're like, so we're going to bounce back and get her, and then we'll just keep going. And I was like, guys. So then, like, this is, like, right when the pandemic was kind of, like, loosening up and everyone was kind of desperate to, like, see each other again. Because all of our sessions up until that point were over Zoom. So now we're, like, playing together. And there's a drink called Viking's Blood. And it's super high alcohol content, like, mead. So we killed, like, a bottle and a half. So at this point, I'm like, full on acting for everybody. And like one of the characters was force sensitive. He was like keeping the Jedi thing on like the DL. But then like he was just like, all right, I'm gonna do a perception check, and he killed it. So I'm just like, you feel the energy of the room. And I broke down like this girl getting taken to such detail.
Oh, so he's like reading the past of what happened.
Yeah, nice. And it just like it upset the player.
Oh no.
So he was like crying a bit, and he was like we did this, and I was like, oh, I was like, all right, I can't drink in DM anymore. Like, that was the last time I did it. I was like, can't do it. I was like, all right, but that was like the most awkward because we still had like the rest of the session to go.
You guys still have flashbacks to that day.
Yeah. So now whenever I start like writing something for like a campaign, I'm just like, pull it back. Don't let Nate cry. Like,
okay. It was too much, man. It was too much.
Yeah. I was like, I did too much.
So I told you I ran the same game for like 7 years, right? And most of that was the same players. Because with World of Darkness, it's not combat based. There's a lot of combat in it, but it's more about story. So the characters mostly didn't die. And then one time, one of the guys that had been there since the beginning died. And we're all just kind of looked at each other. And we're like, so I guess make a new character? And then while we're talking about it, all the other guys look at each other and go, we're going to bring him back to life. And we're like, okay, you guys figure this out. Do it. And what happened is there had been this ongoing taxi cab driver that was in like every game, even whether we were set in the past or the present, he always shows up. His name is Jimmy Ho, and he's of indeterminate cultural ancestry. Like, we don't even know where the heck he's from, but he always knows things he shouldn't, and he always takes shortcuts through hell. And so they knew he knew how to get to the afterlife. So, you know, it was a whole thing, but it was a lot of fun. Yeah. I was like, you know what? Do it. Find a way to make it happen. Let's do it. And it's kind of fun having the players kind of run the game, because I didn't plan any of that out. It was all just them deciding based on other things that existed in the world up to that point. How can we bring him back from the dead? And I was like, I love it. I love it so much.
Oh my god!
I started a game as a Dragonborn cleric, and I wanted to bring Tiamat back.
Ooh.
Because like that was my deity, right? Like, I'm a cleric, I'm a dragon. I was like, naturally, that's my guy. So I was setting it up because there are these fish characters in D&D that if they think too hard about something, they can bring it to reality. So my character was walking around with pamphlets. Like, I was basically just like making people second guess their whole lives. Gaslighting everyone in this town because my character would spend time while like other people were at taverns. I'm like sitting there drawing, and the DM made me draw it out. And I had my little pamphlets that I would give to people, like, hey, have you heard of this awesome new god? But I would never say the name or what it was about. I was like, unity, peace, famine. Like, I'm gonna get rid of famine, I'm making everything great. And they're like, oh, this is awesome. And I was slowly trying to like get this cult of these fish people to do my bidding.
Oh my god.
The DM figured it out because he's like, why do you get excited whenever we're in a harbor town? I was like, don't ask questions. Like, that's for me to know.
How far did you get? Did you manage to
I had a handful of followers at that point, but that was the table where it all fell apart.
Oh.
So I never got to like see that through. Man.
Dang.
Yeah. I was super excited about it.
One day, maybe. Yeah. I'm rooting for him. No, that's so fun. I've never, like, you talk about a kill happening in your game, Kevin. I've never experienced a kill
in my party, a player death.
I guess my DMs are just so nice, but I've never experienced
that. Mine, it wasn't my goal to kill them. Yeah. My goal was to make the story bigger, you know, always make the story bigger. And like, he would be just one of those things where he's like, I'm near death, but I'm going to fight anyway. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I killed one person. It was a Star Wars.
Wait, hold on. Wait, we're not being recorded right now, right?
I know where I buried.
of anybody, you would.
So yeah. I did. Our Star Wars campaign was set after episode three, between 3 and 4.
Okay.
So they were basically on the run from like the Empire. Their ship crash lands on this garbage dump planet. Like literally, it's just like where broken AT-ATs go and broken speeders. So they were finding a bunch of old like Clone Wars stuff. And one of them was a clone trooper with like a damaged processor thing. And there was an Ognat there that just collected scraps as like memorabilia from his time at the Empire because he just remembered
I'm loving the story of this world building.
Yeah.
So it was like his memorabilia was just like his time with his other Ognats like doing stuff. Him and the clone trooper hated each other naturally because one was Empire, one was Republic. And then like it got to the point where the clone trooper just needed to get his friends off the planet. Like that's all he was set to do. That's what the player wanted to do. And he ended up going down. He died. But at the end of it, I never like close it with like an epilogue or anything. Like the game's over. But for his character, because it was the first time I had a player die, I had the Ognat go take the body, bury it. And then he put the helmet up on the shelf from like the last encounter with like the past that he would have. So as they went away, I described it to him and I did that for them. But I was like, oh man, killing a player is like, it's rough.
Yeah.
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 You know,
one day.
It's also stuff as a player though. Like the last time I actually tried to play Dungeons & Dragons was actual Dungeons & Dragons proper. Right. And it was a guy who'd never DM'd before. And I hadn't been a player in like 5 years at that point. So probably was a mistake on my part. not his. So like, for example, I'm designing a character and I said, you know what? This looks neat. So I decided to make myself a half orc merchant. And he's like, but half orcs are not good at that. And I'm like, my guy doesn't know that. You know, he's like, they're really dumb. They wouldn't be able to sell things. I'm like, my guy doesn't know that, you know? And then the first thing he did was had me encounter a direwolf. So the first thing my guy goes is, I'm going to catch him and make him a pet. And he's like, you can't do that. It's a monster. I'm like, my guy doesn't know that.
Yeah.
And I feel like I was a really bad player. And I feel really bad for him because he was new to being a dungeon master. And I wasn't big braining. Yes. I wasn't purposely trying to go against the way the game was set up, but I was just like, I wanted to make a character, not just design stats. I'm not one of those guys that wants to like set up so I can win the fight. I want to make it interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like technicalities, rules, fun, but I also like having fun.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I had a character that was a ranger, but I didn't want like a wolf or anything like that. I had a monkey because like I'm only going to play this character.
A dire monkey. No, I'm sorry.
But I would use him because my ranger, like I didn't build him correctly. Like I built him just for mayhem, not for effectiveness in any means. So me and the monkey would just be like Spritle and Chim Chim from Speed Racer. And we were just there for comedic relief.
I'm all there for the callback.
So then like I collected like these colorful stones that I didn't know what they were for, but I was like, that seems like plot. So I took it and I gave it to the monkey and he would juggle it to distract people. So I was like, oh, like he's actually pretty good at it. So that's how my character made money. Like, into a town, post up at a bar. I was like, the monkey's gonna juggle. I rolled. I'm like, he's juggling his heart out. I just have a bag open.
That's awesome. Yeah. And what did the stones end up being?
I don't. That's the table that fell apart. So
oh, no. I'm intrigued in this story.
Every time you say the table that fell apart, I keep thinking, I was trying to have a conclusion to this 7-year-long game. and it was going to end with the apocalypse, because what happened was White Wolf had, at that time, they were closing their universe and they're opening a new universe. So I was going to have the story end and have the characters create the new universe. That was the whole plan. And yeah, it fell apart. Never got to make it happen. I got the whole thing planned out. I also planned out a whole vampires in space story. Like, I had the whole like background. This is like 200 years in the future. Vampires basically are figuring out they can be on a space station. As long as they don't go near the windows, they're okay. You know, because the sun is always out. But somebody had developed like a sun gun, which is basically just instant sunlight. And vampires like crap. You know, so it was going to be this whole thing, but it just never fell together, you know?
Give me one second.
I'm in withdrawal.
Okay. We're just making you want to play now.
Yeah, we should.
No, my son was like freaking out and like his show stopped or something. I was like,
oh, no, Bluey stopped.
Oh, my God.
So how old does he have to be when he gets into his first game?
I was thinking about this because I was like,
I put a lot of thought into this.
I was like, I do want to do a, like, for his birthday one year. Like, if he's into it, I don't want to force him.
Yeah.
But I do.
You're like, you will. You are going to be a paladin and like it.
Yeah. I wrote a kid's comic called Burrow, and it's like Redwall inspired, but it's like these mice. Aww. And yeah, it's like, it's all that stuff. And I wrote it and I was all pumped about it. And then my wife's like, who are you writing that for? I was like, oh, this is the campaign that I'm going to put Ben in when he's bigger. Because I had Redwall-inspired game going for a little while. But then, like, some people's work schedule changed and it fell apart. So I was like, all right.
That's how that happens.
So I just took that and I put it in there. Yeah.
That's cool, though. Oh, I love that idea.
Yeah. Aww. Issue 2 is coming out soon.
You don't really... Of Burrow.
Yeah.
Seriously,
wait till next week.
No, going back to the comics, man. How do you do this? I'm seriously, I'm not even being facetious right now because I also do indie comics, right? I did a book during the pandemic, and I'm doing one currently. I've got it. I just got Kickstarter funds to get it off the ground. I am legitimately asking, how did you get your first 3-4 books out? I feel like once you've got the ball rolling, it's rolling. But like, how'd you do multiple at once? How'd you do that?
So Lockjaw was first. Like that, I put all my Lockjaw time and energy into it. Yeah.
Yeah. I just specify for people that are joining right now. Like, yes, Lockjaw is a Marvel character, but Lockjaw and Pistoletto is a very fun comic about a would it be fair to say undead mariachi? Who avenges things as you should, along with his horse. Tell me about that. It was your first one.
So we got that one kind of once the ball started rolling on that one, I just left it to the artist, like, hey, just keep going. I'll approve it. But I write my scripts pretty detailed, but like I don't write it where I micromanage. So I'm just like, hey, like on the scene, here's the panels that I counted. Like, this is more dialogue heavy, so this is how we're gonna do it. And I just let him do it. And I got lucky with that artist with Medson that he understood it and he ran with it. Yeah, and then while that was happening, I was like, I really want to do this comic called Americana. It's really dark. It's bleak. I was like, but we'll see. And me and that artist spent a lot of time going back and forth on it because like the tone of that one's like super specific. So I spent more time on that, but I needed levity. I needed something because like that book was bringing me down. So I wrote Cinema Muerte on top of it. And while I was getting that book, like giving notes to Americana, I was writing jokes into Cinema Muerte. And that artist is like the biggest nerd I know. Like there's not a reference he can't pick up. So that script is all references. And it was a movie script originally that I wrote. Yeah. So I just changed some of the directional stuff, took it out, changed it to panels, and I gave it to him. And he was like, he was giving me back pages. I'm like, he got it. So while those were happening, I just started writing the rest of them.
But that's the writing process.
Yeah.
What about the production? Like, you have to find artists, you have to work with them. There's funding issues, all that kind of stuff. Like, I, to me, like, if I could just write all the time, I would love it, but I can't run a business. I can't, you know, I can't do that. So like, how does that work?
They were all self-funded. Like, I was working at the funeral home. I'm a wedding photographer. I just never stopped working, and my son wasn't born yet. So it was easy to just, like, I worked 7 days a week for like 2 years to get the money. Cause I started in 2020 on the writing end of it and then started getting some of the art early on. And then it was just like, I made $100 going out. So it was just like that nonstop. And then for Lucha Forever, I was like, I'm going to figure out Kickstarter. I got to figure out how this works. And Lucha Forever was Kickstarted. And I was like, okay, I like it. But the time restraint I didn't like, because I like getting people the next issue as fast as I can, if I can. So I was like, I'll do that again, but for something bigger. Like, I'll have an event comic. Like, another big title drop thing. So I'm planning that out now, but I don't like the speed of Kickstarter, and I don't like the pressuring, like the having to talk about it. Yeah. Before I was like doing TikTok more, it was harder, like, because it was just Instagram that I was on. Now that I have more of a presence on TikTok, I think it'll be easier to like at least talk about it, because people know then that I talk about my books.
Yeah.
But yeah, that early Lucha one just kind of threw me off. But we sold Lucha and Llorona now. So now that's two books that I can keep making that somebody else is paying for.
Hold on, time out. You said you sold?
Oh, yeah. What's so I don't own the rights to Lucha Forever anymore. It's this comic company called Comicer Press.
Which is one of the few of your books that I've not read yet, by the way.
Yeah, Lucha Forever and Llorona, they bought the rights.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I honestly, I mean, congrats. I mean, putting stuff out there and then, yeah, going to the next step. I love it. But speaking of the next step, you are going to be tabling. And this is something that is usually, I know a lot of indie guys that do that a lot, where they will table. And Elia does that a lot, right? As tables at conventions.
I try.
Speaking of which, you're wearing a shirt right now for a convention. What's going on?
For C2E2. So I just got these in for the show. It's like the biggest show in Chicago. It's like,
it's one of the biggest ones in the country.
Yeah. And a lot of comic people are going to be there. So like a lot of the shows that I've been doing, comics aren't really the main focus. It's like meeting Danny Trejo or doing something else.
Then
I happen to catch the comic people that are there. But this one's going to be the first show where like people are specifically going there to meet like Kyle Higgins or like Stephanie Phillips. Like all these comic people are going to be there.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that by doing that, I get to like talk to more comic pros. Yeah. And just actually make new fans that are people that like comics and not just like people that are kind of interested in comics and happen to be there for something else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
There are people that like comics.
I think it's a perfect place.
Yeah.
All right.
Not on Twitter. Not anymore.
No.
Man, I post anything on there and like the first comment I get is just like Prince dead. I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah, right. Like, okay. We're...
I will say I joined Threads recently. I don't use it very often, but I have seen a lot of comic professionals on there. So
yeah.
I was there like a week and Gail Simone started following me, which is like, I was like, what? Really?
Oh, damn.
I was like, cool.
Okay.
I should post more. And then I don't post more.
I feel that.
That's how it goes.
Yeah.
Of the three of us, Ellie, I feel like you're the expert on tabling. What is that process like? From an artist
stressful,
oof.
Expensive.
Oof, oof.
But if you know how to, I think part of the illustration stuff, if you want to get your stuff out there that no one talks about, is the marketing aspect. You got to know how to reach your audience. You got to know how to talk to your audience. You got to know how to reach like people outside of your audience if you want to expand. And it's a lot. Like you can show up, you can table, and I'm talking about like the creator side of it. I know there's like Artist Alley, like people who do nothing but fan art, but like as an indie creator, you have to be able to market what you're doing. You can't just be like, I made a comic, here it is.
Yeah.
Like it's gonna be, this is my comic and this is why you'll like it, and also I'm planning on doing like it. You gotta have everything ready. But I hope to expand more on my experience. I feel like I'm just touching on the edge of where I want to be convention-wise
right now. I'm loving this though, because, well, oh, sorry. I thought you meant expand on describing your experience, because I'm loving that we're having this discussion.
Yeah.
I feel like for a lot of listeners, this is key stuff. As you're talking about, you have to put a comic out there, not just like have it, but tell people about it. Mm-hmm. It occurs to me, since I've been posting online, you know, mostly TikTok, right? I got a few people reach out to me, right? One person reached out to me, said, hey, I'm a first-time artist. I'm doing this. Here's what the project is. I've got little bits. I'm going to go on Kickstarter. And I looked at it. I said, you know what? I love your stuff. I think it's a great idea. Let's do it. Somebody else sent me just like the cover of their book and no words. Hmm. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. I know it's your book. The art looks good. I'm sure the story is going to be great. But like, unless you when you're reaching out to people, you got to tell them what's happening. They may ignore you. They may tell you no, but like you have to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
How honest do you get with people? Because I had someone reach out and they want me to do a review of their book. And I was like, hey, man, I'm going to do like a real fluff one for you. I was like, there is some pacing. Like I got two issues out of it. Like I bought it. So that way I didn't want them to like give me anything. Because like you're new. Let me support. I'll buy them.
Yeah.
I bought it. And I was just like, hey, like I'm two issues in and nothing's happened. Like it's been two issues of exposition and I don't want to like break your heart, but
yeah, I flat out ask people, do you want a critique or do you want a nice review? And every once in a while I'll have somebody that'll pause and be like, I want a nice review. And I'll be like, all right, I really like the art. I like the colors you have chosen. I can really see where you're going with this. It's a heck of a lot of fun. But if somebody wants a critique, I will give them a critique. And every once in a while, somebody will say, I can take it. Give me a full critique. I say, okay. And I don't tear them apart, but I'm like, all right, well, you need to develop this. You need to develop this. You need to develop this. But it's basically there. And then radio silence. Like I want a critique. I give them. And again, I'm not, people who know me, you know, I always try to find positives in everything I'm talking about. It's still too much for some people. They're like, no. Whereas me, I fully encourage you read my book. Tell me what's wrong with it. I will be fine with it.
Ooh, okay. You know? No.
You're like notes. You're all right. All marked up with little like tabs everywhere. No, I'm down for that. I'm not going to be offended. I mean, flat out, sometimes there'll be things like, no, I'm keeping that because that needs to be this way. But other times it'll be like, okay, cool. I see why that's the problem. You know?
Yeah.
On that note, let's talk about story creation. You already talked about like, you know, D&D came from that. And you talked about where do story ideas come from when you're trying to develop your worlds?
So usually I'll start with a scene. And in Familiar Dungeons, I remember when I wanted to write it, it was the scene and it's Emmanuel and it's Sophia and they're sitting there and the sun's setting down and the game's going to restart. And you could see she's like, I'm ride or die for whatever's going to happen next. But like, I just need to know that eventually we're going to go past this. And he's very much telling her, like, I don't think I can. And she was like, we'll talk about it tomorrow. And then they let themselves restart. For some reason, that scene was in my head because I saw the dragon in the distance and the tower. Because I was like, that's my, I can't remember. There's like this rule in filmmaking that if you see a gun, it's got to go off.
Yeah, Chekhov's gun.
So that tower and that dragon, that's my like Chekhov's gun of like, that's, we're gonna get there. Yeah. So I wrote that scene first in my head. And then I was like, well, who is he? Why are we here? And then everything starts to, I always build kind of backwards or from like the middle out. And then I started doing it that way. And then I was like, okay, this is where I can put my family in. And that's who these characters are. And then even the villain, this Sylvester kid, like I was like, oh, I know him. He's just like that angry nerd that's like, D&D is getting too popular and I'm getting edged out of this game because like all my microaggressions that I can put into this game are not cool anymore.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I want to tell his story because I understand like if you're really into something and now it's popular and now you feel like you own it anymore, it's scary. But also grow up. So like that's what I'm doing with him and like that character. And like the side characters are, some are like pulled from like D&D games that I've run, but other ones are just meant to be like actual family experiences, like people getting offered careers or people like coming into lives that kind of pull other people out of your life. Like those kind of things are all going to be in there too. So it's just like, as I'm writing it, they come to me or I'll think of a scene or I'll see something. I'm like, you know what would be cool? And then it makes its way in.
Elliot, how about you? You've written a lot of like short comics, but you've also written some that have ongoing stories. How do you develop your stories?
Oh, it's so difficult. I still find myself learning how to be a better storyteller. I've never really been good at writing.
That's always a process for everybody.
It's such
a process. Even people like Jonathan.
Yeah.
That's why I wrote 26. We got to figure it out.
No, I've always been just such a visual person. I tell my stories with pictures to avoid words, but I mean, I got to have words behind the pictures. And so what I've found that I do commonly, now that I was listening to John talk about it, I'm like, yeah, I think about where I start a story and where I want it to end up. And then the middle part is where I get lost a lot. I feel like I trail off and do like side quests that don't need to be there. And then we get to the end and I don't like what's in the middle anymore. So that's where my writing struggle is. But I have no problem coming up with how do I want to start my story and build it up? How do I want to come down and get to the resolution? I will take any lessons on how to do the middle part better.
You know, I think when it comes to, I mean, everybody's different, but for me, I often look at the story act structure, whether it's like, you know, the beginning at the climax and everything like that, or even I always hesitate to tell people I encourage people not to use the hero's journey as a basis for your story. But you can still take ideas from it. I know for myself, I usually start with a basic like elevator pitch idea. Like, oh, here's a concept. I like it. But it goes nowhere unless I can develop the characters. Once I know that the characters have lives of their own, they've got loves, they've got hates, they have things that they have goals. That's when the story comes together. So for example, with World's War Comics, which is currently being made, working on it right now. I hope to have it out in the next couple months. I guess what you're talking about, John, about the time frame for Kickstarter. I had to wait before going to the next step until it got funded because I just can't.
Yeah.
You know. But people would ask me, oh, what are the powers of the characters? I'm like, well, I can describe the powers to you, but that's not the important part. to me, it's not about whether who wins, who's stronger in a fight. It's about why are they fighting and what is the goal? And that's the big thing for me.
That's a big frustration thing for me. Is like people will pitch me their stuff or they'll come at me with something and they'll be like, well, like my character can do this. And this is why he could like kill your characters. I was like, dude, I don't care.
That's not the goal.
Yeah. It's like a broken actor trying to figure out his thing. But I'll do that. Like, I don't care about any of my characters, like powers or abilities. Like it's there to move the story and to help the story, but it's not there to be and this is the only thing that can stop them. Yeah. But a lot of indie guys, I think, get lost in that where it's just like, well, the powers are the story and not the characters.
I think that comes from a lot of like early storytelling. You know, you read this as a kid, you think about the big fights. That's what people want to focus on.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like you could have Superman fighting Green Arrow and there is a way for Green Arrow to win. And you know, there's a kryptonite. I'm like, that's not the important part. It's not about how they won. It's the point of like, should the character win, you know, and how? That's one thing I love about like Doctor Who, for example, is there's never a question of whether or not Doctor Who can defeat the bad guys. Always defeat the bad guys. The question is often, should the Doctor win? And I love that. One of my favorite runs in comics is Dan Slott's Silver Surfer run. And one thing that always drives me nuts is whenever people take over Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, or they take over Doctor Strange, one of the first things they do is depower the character. Like three of Carol Danvers' runs start with her losing power in some way. And at least two of Doctor Strange's recent runs the past 10 years started with him losing powers. And Dan Slott's Silver Surfer run was like, no, he's full power all the way through. He is basically a god. Like, and I mean that like even two people like Thor. And it was never, can he win? It was always, should he? And then learning not the limitations of himself, but of ethics. And I'm like, that is interesting to me.
Yeah. You know? People that tell me that Superman's a boring character, it's kind of like a red flag. Cause I'm
entirely.
Yeah. I was like, he's not boring. You're just not thinking about him correctly.
Yep.
And that's like my bucket list character to like, write.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
I'm the same way. I would love to take somebody like Doctor Strange. There was a thing I read once that was basically an editor said he didn't like Doctor Strange because there's no rules to his magic. And I'm like, no, there are rules. There are more rules to Doctor Strange than there are to what Tony Stark and Reed Richards can do to science. Like literally those guys can do anything, whereas he has limitations. They may be like God tier limitations, but they're there. And I find that interesting, you know? I'm sorry.
One of the
too big.
My last like rant thing. There was that X-Men versus Avengers.
Yeah.
There was that X-Men versus Avengers event a couple years back.
Yeah.
And then Magneto was
AVX.
And then it was like Magneto versus Iron Man, because I was working at the comic book store at the time, and people would come in and argue with me. And I was like, guys, like Magneto's should win by all accounts. And then the issue comes out and Magneto loses because Iron Man has a plastic suit, like plastic nanos that cover him. And I was like, he's just magic now. Like, he's just magic.
The thing is, here's the thing. I'm not going to get into who would win things, but I will say this. Iron Man has fought people with magnetic powers before. So it's not like it's new to him. But at the same time, it's like, that's not the important part. There's a comic book out there in which Toad, Magneto's lackey in most of the media, defeated Magneto and is running Genosha with Magneto underneath him. And it's like, that's an actual Marvel comic. You know, like, anything can happen. It just depends on the story. It's all that matters. That being said, there are some bad stories. There's literally a story where Batman beats up the Hulk. And I'm like, why is that a thing? And this is before Batman became his, like, ultimate Avenger of the Night thing that he became in the 90s. Literally, he kicks the Hulk until the Hulk gets winded. And then the Hulk breathes in sleeping gas and passes out. And I'm like, how? Oh, come on. This guy's taking atomic bombs to the gut and Batman kicking him knocks him out.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
It was more like self-inflicted. He didn't want to deal with Batman anymore.
He's like, I feel guilty in this fight. I'm going to go out.
Yeah.
He's crying about his parents. It's time for me to go.
And then, you know, while we're on that topic of things being overdone, the big issue with a lot of like superhero movies, I think everybody's talking about superhero fatigue. I don't think it's necessarily superhero fatigue. It's just that people are tired of seeing the same story. How many superhero movies are the hero versus their evil twin? You know, like every Marvel origin movie does that. And now a lot of the DC movies are doing that. And I'm like, if you told me tomorrow that the next DC movie was going to be Superman versus Mixed Jazz Pickle, I'd be so happy. I'd be like, yes, I am down there. I'll be first in line to buy a ticket. You know, give me something different. Have fun with it. Have a blast.
Yeah. I think the movie should be fun still. Like, I think that's something Marvel did really well is, like, they made them fun because DC was always so dark. But I think, like, especially with James Gunn, you're going to see more fun, more B characters, stuff like that. And I think he'll do stuff to serve the story.
Yeah, but we're still starting with Lex Luthor, though. And to me, it's I like Lex Luthor, except for the last version. And I like Magneto, but I don't think every Superman movie needs Lex Luthor. Not every X-Men movie needs Magneto, you know?
No. Unless it's Michael Fassbender because he's pretty.
I'm not going to lie. He is 100% pretty. Yeah.
I was rewatching it and I was like, this isn't going anywhere, but he's hot.
Cumbia. La vida sigue. La gente llora. El zapato vuela junto a tu boca. La gente cruza. Los carros chocan.
Talk about the process of making it. Tell me about your collaborator. Who are you working with for this? You mentioned the artist, but we didn't give us the name. Who's the artist we're working with?
Yeah.
His name is Alatir. He's like totally new to me. Like one of my friends that did Americana, he knows this guy. And he was like, you're going to like it. The style is different than like the other books that I have, which is what like really appealed to me. And he actually draws some of the Topps cards that Marvel releases.
Nice.
He's the artist for that. So he's always really busy. So that's why this book takes a little bit longer, took so long to come out, because I've been working on it for a while.
Yeah.
And like his process on it is awesome. Like from the moment he sends me the layouts, it's already almost fully penciled.
Because he
wants me to see the whole environment.
Yeah.
As it's a risky move because if
we got a movie. Ronaldo Garza, the artist I was working with on World War Comics, he's the same way. Like, I think it's like he doesn't want somebody to see sketches. He wants to see the finished product, but I would rather see sketches so that I can make suggestions or corrections. But no, he wants to give me fully inked pages and then say, all right, what should I fix? I'm like, I feel so guilty saying anything at that point, but I'm like, this guy needs to be different here, you know? Yeah. But like, oh man.
I love the line work. I'm gushing over this art. I'm just like, what? And I also love because, like, there's the style, you know, the comic style, and then there's the character with a little chibi face that's like, oh, it's at the very end.
But oh my god,
I was like, stop. It was very much like a manga sort of style reaction, and I was like, that's cute. I love that.
Just he gave the goblins like personalities on their faces too. Like,
yeah,
they're smiling and they're celebrating at times. I'm like, okay, thank god. Like, he got like the levity of it, because I was like, D&D is always silly. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the day, you're gonna, as the DM, they're gonna railroad you into something crazy, and you have to like improv your way out of it. So I was like, the characters, the monsters are gonna feel that way at times. A little bit of a spoiler thing, but for like issue two, they realize they have to find a quest giver, because now that the game is evolving, the older brother's like, I know how this goes. We got to get a quest. It'll move us forward.
Yeah.
So everything around them is like, oh no, my parents are dying, or the forest is burning. And he's like, ignore it. Yeah. He's like, I know where we have to go. He's like, that's a quest. Yeah. He was like, we're not talking to anyone. And then they get to a tavern. He's like, whatever you do, don't say hi to anyone. Don't talk to anyone. And then he goes to the back room to find the wizard. But the wizard's like, you have to give me something to get the quest.
Oh no.
And he was like, all right. And then the wizard's sitting on the like an iron throne type thing, but it's cell phones, because all these kids are there, and that's what the kids have to give them, because all the teenagers are there.
Yeah.
So he gives them the phone. He's like, guess I'm not gonna need it. And it's like a super silly wizard guy, but I'm just like, because that's what I would have done if I was DMing the story for them, because like how ridiculous it would be if like you guys are coming to me knowing you need to go on. So that's something fun that's going to happen there.
That's,
and then
awesome,
just the interaction in the tavern. Like, I was cracking up while I was writing it. And then I gave it to the artist, and he was like, can I draw funny things in the background? And I was like, please.
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Okay, Don't say hi to anyone.
Speaking of waiting, I want to ask right now, when you said that's why this book took so long, what does that mean in your world?
This book was written because I have a Google Drive where all my folders are numbered.
Yeah.
But from when you started this
as a, this is going to be a comic, to publishing it. Not just you had, because I imagine you made that a script earlier, but from you're like, I'm going to make this one now, to it's ready to be published. How long was that?
10 months.
All right. Okay. That's decent. Yeah. All right. Okay. Because I thought you were going to say like it took 10 days. That's why it took so long. And I was like, what?
No. So this one, we started, then he got hired by Marvel. So he took a break.
How dare he?
I was like, go get that money. Like,
hell
go.
Yeah.
And then he came back and he was like, I drew 5 pages on my break. Great.
Okay.
And then me and the colorist were going back and forth a lot. And then it felt like the book wasn't going to happen because there was so much time, like dead air between the pencil, like the layouts to where I was. And I was like, I don't know if I could finish the story, because like that first part in the party, I need that for the story. Like, I need you to understand, like, these kids are flawed. They're teenagers. They're going to act like teenagers. And then, like, you see Emmanuel's fear of public performance, but he's going to end up being the bard. Like, I needed that to show you that they're not always good at stuff, but they're going to be good here. Like, I needed that. So I couldn't cut those scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of notes that I was getting back from, like, early readers was, like, when do we get to the fantasy world? Like Milhouse going like, when do we get to the fireworks factory?
Yeah.
Like in the Simpsons, that's what I was getting back. And I was like, we're going to get there and we're not going to do a lot of flashbacks, but for story-wise, I have to do this.
If I could say anything, I appreciated the amount of time you spent in the real world.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something that a lot of modern audiences have gotten used to, this instant gratification, which is not, it's not to say that's a negative. I mean, that's perfectly legitimate as a story, but there is something to be said to building into a world before it falls apart. You know, look at Alien or even King Kong. It's a long time before you see the main character, the main creature, you know, and it's like, you know, you're not even going 10 pages, I don't think. So it's like, they can take it. I didn't have a problem with that at all. That being said, you said ready to come out. When is this available and how will it be available?
Mm-hmm. So it is available now. People can buy it on like the website.
Wait, the website is
avinacomics.com.
Thank you.
And on our TikTok shop. So it's at Avena Comics. On the TikTok shop, we are offering the bundle that comes with the dice dagger and the comic. And then it comes with the dice too, because for each issue that we sell, we're actually including a one-shot solo player D&D adventure that I wrote.
What?
Yeah. So, and then I bought
solo this, player. Like, I like that.
I bought a wax burner. So on the back of the envelope, because it comes in an envelope and it'll say like adventurer on it. And then the press thing is a D20.
Oh my God. So yeah, I saw the one you said to Freddie. I love it. I saw it.
Yeah.
It's so good. Oh my gosh.
So it comes with that. So if they're like, I don't really play D&D, I'm like, well, if you've ever wanted to, here's a single player thing that you can do. It's more of like a choose your own adventure. Like, you don't get to build like a super elaborate character.
Yeah.
All you need is a D20 and you can play it. And there's like 10 different outcomes that I wrote. It was a lot harder than I thought. Cause I was like, I've run games for years. Like, I can do this. And I sat there. Yeah. I was like, I have to make this fun for one person that I've never met. Like, we got to go back. And then like, it took me a couple of weeks to get it, but now it's super fun.
Of the 10 endings, is one of them just, I fought with the bouncer for 20 minutes. I feel like every time we started the game, the guy running the game is a big plan. And then it's like the players just fought with the guy at the door and it never got past the door.
There's one where it's just like you run outside to see what's happening and you take an arrow to the chest, start over.
True to the choose your own adventure.
I need to get this and play it with my stream and we can like draw these scenarios out. Like, we can just have a random rolling last day of the month and it's like, all right, let's draw an adventure. Let's go. That's so cool.
We're doing another one for issue two. So, nice. Like, each issue will have one of these.
Y'all get ready. Like, oh my gosh, that's awesome.
As we draw to a close, I was going to ask you where people can find you, but you did kind of say that. Is there anywhere else people can find you online?
Yeah.
So I am on X, Twitter, or whatever. I'm trying to build a presence there in case TikTok.
I'm sorry for me on that one.
Yeah. I was like, I'm getting closer to like a 10,000 like mark too. And I'm like, oh, well, there that goes.
Great. I just hit 10K this past weekend. I've been so excited. And the big joke with all my friends is like, cool. The day after you get 10K, it's going to get banned. I'm like, all right.
Yeah. I'm like 700 away. And I'm like,
All the primos, go follow John. Go follow Elia Maria.
Please get the 10K before it shuts down.
Which, speaking of which, Elia Maria, how do we find you online?
Right here, Spiced Illustrations on everything, except Twitter, because they didn't give me enough characters, so just Illustrations.
Anyway.
I hate Twitter. It's not the same.
I do not. I technically have an account. I don't acknowledge it.
It used to be fun.
But Elia Maria, I'm loving your TikToks. I love the so much One Piece content, but very well worth it.
Listen, I hyper focus is like, I'm caught up now though, so I have to switch to a new series to keep myself distracted while Egghead's going.
And of course, for me, you can find me at KevinGarcia_com. On the TikTok, on the Instagram, and sort of on Threads, although I don't use it yet. I'm still working on using it and a few other places. And of course, you can find My Primos Podcast at myprimospodcast.com and also at My Primos Podcast at most of your favorite social media places. And on all of those streaming podcast apps, you know, we're on Spotify, we're on, you know, it's nice knowing that as we're at the end of a show, that people have apparently listened to, I'm telling them how to listen to us.
Yeah. You know,
you never know though. You never know.
Yeah. Like, three other streaming services. Go.
are we on Netflix? Not yet. No. Okay. Never coming to Max. Okay. all right. Well, on that note, I want to thank you all very much. It's always good having one of our prime primas, Elia Maria, here. And it is good having one of our regular guest primas, Donna Vigna, here. So, guys, thank you very much. Have a great whatever it is you have. And join us next Primo time, same Primo channel, for My Primos Podcast. We out!
Bye! Yay!
rosa entre espinar salta, mi amor.